Good evening, friends. When the ballots are counted on the night of November 2nd, we will get a fairly good measure of the temper of the American people. As usual in an American political campaign, the candidates appear in many cases to be advocating the same things. They pay lip service to the bipartisan foreign policy, and they promise just about everything to everybody. But each candidate attempts to convince the voters that he can do a better job of delivering the goods than the other fellow. In this campaign, there is one fundamental difference between the two major parties on which I think most independent voters will make their choice. Mr. Dewey will appeal to those who are fairly well satisfied with things as they are, who believe what we need is better administration of present laws, and that any changes should be made slowly and carefully. He will appeal to people who are reasonably happy, comfortable, and contented with life. Mr. Truman, on the other hand, will appeal to those who think there are a great many things that are wrong with this country, people who do not think the reforms inaugurated under the administration of President Roosevelt have gone far enough, or who feel that if the men who oppose those reforms are placed in power, they will destroy or maim a great many of them. So, in a very real sense, the election November 2nd will reveal the extent to which the American people are contented or discontented. Not all the discontented folks will vote for Mr. Truman. Those who are the most discontented will vote for Wallace or one of the minor party candidates, like Norman Thomas. The contented folk down south will vote in many cases for Mr. Thurman, the Dixiecrat candidate. But in spite of all these exceptions, the overwhelming majority of voters who like things the way they are will vote for Mr. Dewey, while those who don't will vote for Mr. Truman. If the public opinion polls are any criterion, Mr. Dewey will win, which, if our analysis is valid, means that most people in this country are doing pretty well. Undoubtedly, they fear war, but they do not believe that any drastic change in our foreign policy, such as Mr. Wallace prescribes, would be wise or prudent. We are going conservative. Now, that doesn't mean we're going fascist or reactionary, as the radicals would have us believe, although such an eventuality could come about if present trends were to continue indefinitely and unchecked. The chances are overwhelming, however, that they won't. The pendulum now appears to be swinging away from reform. It has done so many other times in American history. Every great period of reform has been followed by a period when conservatives assimilated and digested the changes made in the preceding reform surge. Curiously enough, this usually has come after a war. It happened after the Civil War, when we completed one of the great reform epochs of American history. It happened again after World War I, following the great reform era of Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson. Now it is happening again. In every case, the liberals, progressives, or radicals, call them what you will, have made a comeback after a time and have started a new era of reform. That will happen again. The tremendous changes wrought in the American way of life from 1933 to the end of World War II are going to have to be digested. But the body politic will again demand, in due course, another feeding of reform. That is the way we grow and progress. Good night.